I just have to ask, how was that for you guys? How was that listening, sharing? Good? Thumbs up? Yeah? It was good? That's great. I'm glad to hear it. How about the guys? How did you guys do with the listening? I'm not trying to, like, imply anything by asking that question.
So I want to share, just kick off this Q&A time, sharing about, as a counselor, my profession is listening. But the nature of when someone is talking about trauma or being victimized by abuse, the story never comes out systematically or planned or even in a way where it's easy for the listener to track. That's why it's so important to be disciplined with your questions, to be present, everything that my mom just went over. So I was working with an adolescent who came to counseling with the goals of moving through self-injurious behavior and an eating disorder. And we worked through those goals for a few years. And we're ready to kind of wrap up and to kind of set up for the season beyond counseling. And that last session was when she disclosed sexual abuse that she had been through. And that was incredibly humbling as a counselor, because you'd think I would be getting that story tied in from the beginning with everything that we're working on. And that's something I'm always reflecting on. Am I prepared to receive whatever that person has today? That trauma does not present itself in a way where you're just like ready for it and able to track with it. But are you showing up to the conversation with the little loaves of bread that God has given you, with these three very simple questions equipped with, and ready to receive whatever that person has? So if you're in a listening relationship right now and you're kind of not sure where it's going or what the purpose is, keep being faithful to showing up, to doing what you've committed to. I'm not saying to overextend yourself beyond what your boundaries are, but we have a very wide category with trauma and abuse for how those things are going to come up. And oftentimes the victim is testing you for a while, not in a vindictive way where they're trying to say gotcha, but they're trying to see, can this person receive what I'm saying? And if we study and go back to those verses that my mom went over, it's very encouraging to think, okay, I want to be prepared to receive the story from whoever's willing to share it with me.
I have an example of a gal that I was meeting with, and she was in her 30s and navigating being single when she would really like to be in a relationship. And after a few weeks of meeting with her, she disclosed some abuse that she had experienced as a younger child and indicated that that was in her past, that she really didn't want to talk about it anymore, and it was there. She was just telling me so I would know, right? And yet it kept coming up. It kept being such an important element in her healing and her growth that she didn't want to deal with. So as someone who's listening and walking alongside someone who's has experienced abuse or is experiencing abuse, we have to understand that it's really difficult and actually takes a lot of courage to, one, to bring it into the light, and then, two, to actually want to go there and do the deep, painful work that's required of healing in that situation. So I think by naming kind of these two examples, we can say that we can move toward people in love and actually trust that God is going to do the work in them, in His timing, in His gracious revealing of transformation for them.
So we have a few anonymous questions that maybe we'll start with, and then also, of course, you're welcome to raise your hand and ask a question.
What wisdom would you give to someone whose abuser plays an unchangeable role in their life, like a parent or a sibling?
That's a really hard question. I just want to name for the person who asked it, the place that you find yourself in is courageous to be willing to ask the question. And I'm also just thinking of, number one, your safety with that relationship. That's our priority, your safety, and then you're committed to the safety of any minors or seniors or people with intellectual disabilities that you're walking with. And I've mentioned this before, we're mandated reporters. And so we're thinking of the unchanging nature of that relationship, but we are also very committed to someone's safety if you have knowledge of an unsafe relationship. Beyond that, you get to walk with wisdom, you get to walk in the light with community that are going to journey with you. And so you need to be in a counseling relationship, I would recommend, whether it's pastoral or a lay leader or professional counseling, where you can be checking in and tuning into your emotions, how you're working in that relationship. You don't have to be exactly where you want to be in that friendship or that relationship today. So give yourself time and a lot of bandwidth to be kind of reestablishing, if you were victimized by that person, your own sense of self and personhood as it relates to Jesus Christ as your protector, not as it relates to that person. So I'd say we have a zero tolerance for abuse, and if that person is actively abusing you, you do not need to be in a relationship with that person. Your safety and being out of there is my number one concern as your counselor. But we are also, like that person named, an unchanging relationship. So if the Lord is prompting you to pray for that person, that is a safe way to be in a relationship with someone, bringing that name before the Lord, asking people to pray for that person on your behalf, and having visibility into that relationship. My professor in grad school talked about a woman whose father abused her, and she entered a season where she actually wanted a relationship with her father. No one should be pushing you towards that if they're giving you advice and you're not ready for it. As a counselor, I would always be deferring to the pacing of the victim and supporting them in that. But she decided that she would call her dad, this victim that I'm talking about, once a month. And anytime her dad would take the conversation in an unsafe direction where her emotional response was saying, this is no longer safe, she would immediately hang up. So we have zero tolerance for anything of the sort. And she was in a season of her life where she felt like she could discern that. And the story that my professor told is that eventually they were able to have some kind of relationship. But there was a lot of wisdom and advice surrounding the steps that person took. As a counselor, I would never have a prescriptive approach to this. And I would also never make this decision kind of by myself as a counselor. It's my favorite part of how CrossCare works, is that we're partnering with the local church. So I would partner with somebody like Josh, whoever's referring, and saying, what kind of support are you getting throughout the week and long-term as we think about your goals for this person?
You know, the word boundaries is used a lot in our culture today, in our society, and I think it's an appropriate one to use in this situation. Rebecca referred to it. Like, you can have an ongoing relationship with a person that has abused you, but you don't have to have like an open relationship with that person, right? You can say, you know, not today, not next week, a phone call, like the example. You can make the decision about what that relationship is going to look like, whether it looks like, you know, it doesn't, that relationship, of course, we would like to see that be reconciled at some point or reinstated. But that can take a lot of time, right? And so I want you guys to hear from Rebecca and from me that you have permission to go as slowly as you need to rebuild that relationship, if that's appropriate to be rebuilt.
I think if I was working with someone and that kind of became the goal, reestablishing control, I would go really slow towards that word, because we identified control and power as a hallmark of an abusive relationship. So if your purpose for rebuilding a relationship with an abuser is to get some semblance of control, I would actually wonder about you kind of then you becoming the abuser and then becoming the victim. You're not saying that, I'm just thinking kind of like down the road of where that might go. And so are we entering that still as a Christian, still seeking to serve, seeking to bless? And that's where I say it's very, very rare to re-enter a past abusive relationship.
How can we help distinguish between actual abuse and having a victim mindset?
Mm. We're all vulnerable, right? We are all vulnerable human beings because we are created to need Jesus primarily. So the ultimate care that we are seeking, our only satisfaction, our only hope, can be found in Jesus. But yet, as vulnerable people, we look to other people to meet our needs, and sometimes in really unhealthy ways. So that can put us in a vulnerable position to become victims, or sort of to continue a victim mindset as the question is asked. I think it would help to have a listening ear, someone that can listen with understanding to help you be able to process through what's the difference between this victim mindset and being a victim. What would you add to that, Rebecca?
That's really well said. Victim mindset and actually being a victim. I think I just spent 4 years working with college students who are very good at being sensitive to kind of victim mindset as they go through the world. And so I have a big category and love for someone who might be leaning into that without actually being victimized. As listeners, with the content that my mom just presented, we don't have to come up with a message. We just meet them and enter into that space, and we realize that they're leaning into the victimness, even if they haven't been victimized, is coming from somewhere. So we're open-handed with that, we're curious, and we actually don't have to be the messengers of saying, like, well, you know, you actually weren't a victim. But we're going to scripture to understand. I would do a lot of work around who am I really? Who does God say that I am? And that's helpful both for people who are victims, that I would say is a goal down the road, and people who are just kind of like caught up in that of saying, like, well, that person's story was really bad. I think, you know, I'm also a victim. And we get to just bring that to the light, bring that before the Lord, and God is the God who names that, not us. And so you don't have to enter these listening relationships feeling the pressure to identify and name it. That's some of the work we were doing in the first session, is I didn't say, like, you need to go say, you're being abused and here's how, and on my list, this is the one that you're being abused by. You're saying, I'm curious, I'm wondering, how can I help you navigate that? Did I bring clarity to that to make that more confusing?
I think so.
If someone has wondered if they were abused in the home by siblings in years past, but claims they are unsure, how would you move forward to care for them?
So the question is about past memories of potential abuse, but not being totally sure what you went through. And we have a lot of sensitivity in the counseling world around past memories, because there's kind of lines of counseling that like tell you to press into those memories, that those are absolutely for certain, and you need to treat them as reality. There's a lot of danger in that, where counselors have been accused of kind of planting in false memories and creating this trauma in someone's life who's already very vulnerable, and trusting their counselor who has power in that relationship, and that becomes an abusive relationship. So when somebody comes to me and says, you know, I had this experience, I'm not really sure what it was or even what really happened, I say, well, let's talk about it. Let's name it in this space, because this is a confidential counseling space, and we and this room can hold it. And I say, what do you remember? What don't you remember? What dreams have you had about it? What is being recalled? And then we go to the present of, okay, so what is impacting you now? Is it now you have to see this person and you feel unsafe and you're trying to discern what should my appropriate boundaries be? We do the work that we can with the information that we have, without elaborating on the memories or kind of becoming beholden to the memories themselves. Those don't necessarily have the final word. Again, our stories of being victimized, that doesn't have the final word either. There's a greater story that holds all of that together. And I don't talk in those terms of like being overly theoretical, but I'm thinking about that. That makes me not afraid when someone starts talking about memories that they're not quite sure about. We can be confident and incredibly patient with that, and also go practical with that, of moving with that person, like, okay, you know, why is that coming up now in this season for you? Help me understand. Oh, it's because you have another relationship that reminds you of this past relationship. Okay, well, let's think how we're going to respond to this person, and not kind of obsessing about that past. And we can wonder, like, why is God surfacing that in this season? What could God be up to? It is good. It is for our good. It is for our growth.
I think that's a beautiful answer. And the only thing that I would add to that is that wisdom comes from God, right? And there are things that is listening, helpers that we cannot know, that we cannot understand. But God knows that person's heart. God knows what their past experience has been. God knows what those dreams might mean or those vague memories might be all about. And he wants to reveal the truth, and he wants to bring healing to the in those places. So we can ask God. We can ask God for wisdom as we listen. We can pray for the person and gently, lovingly bring them to Jesus so that he can actually do that work of revealing to them.
How do you address a child that emotionally and psychologically abuses his or her siblings and the parents are unwilling or unable to stop it?
So the responsible person in that family are the parents, and they need support. So I would be very concerned about the unwilling to comply with whatever feedback they're getting if there is an abusive child in the home. If you're a mandated reporter, the parents can't stop you from reporting. And that is an incredibly difficult place to be, but if someone's physical safety is on, we don't wait and see. And we don't wait for years down the line when the child is going to process having an abusive sibling in the home to say, well, you're right, I thought it was abuse too, and you're right, your parents did nothing. No, you are an adult in their lives who has the responsibility of bringing in the proper authorities to respond. The church gets to collaborate with local authorities, but the church also can be wise in intervening with the family, because hopefully that family has a relationship with the pastors, with the leaders at the church. And so the priority in this situation is the other sibling's safety. And so if a child needs to be removed from the home, maybe you don't have to wait till the local authorities get involved, but you say, hey, this family can take your child for a certain number of days, and just to get understanding. That gets very messy very fast. I'm just saying we're committed to safety, and we are thinking creatively about how to protect the children that might be at risk. What would you add?
That's for sure is the right approach. We have to think about the safety of the other children in the home, and also other children that might be in relationship with that child. So we'll talk about this more later, but the church is not called to investigate. The church is called to report. And God has set up government agencies, the police, for our protection. And it can get messy fast, as Rebecca said, but they actually are trained and able to help families in those kinds of situations and have resources available that can partner with the church, can partner with you to help that family. Because first of all, we want everyone to be safe, including the child who is not being safe at this point.
Right, but you're very concerned about the child displaying the risky behaviors, because where are they learning it from? Sin impacts all of us from an early age, but what is the input that child is becoming physically or emotionally abusive? And so again, as a responsible adult witness to that, you're not the investigator, you are the bringer to the light-er, and you do that with authorities, with your pastors or church.
Next question. How should an adult respond to their parents if his or her parents are in an abusive relationship? And along with that, how would he or she manage to move forward in his or her own life with a healthy family of their own?
An adult whose parents are in an abusive relationship. Well, if you are an adult and you are able to have insight into what's going on in the abusive marriage that you're watching unfold, you're concerned about safety. I think we get past the safety question pretty quickly in conversations of abuse, and I'm always trying to draw us back there to keep the abuse is actually life-threatening for some people. And we assume when we see abuse, that we have just the tip of the iceberg of the story. And so again, we're not writing the whole story, but we have a humbleness to when we're picking up on patterns of abuse to realize this could be way more serious than I'm realizing. So our priority is safety in that. And then I think as a child, it depends what your strengths and your calling and your ability is. You cannot fix your parents' marriage. You can help ask for safety for the parent that needs it, and seek accountability if the law is being broken by the other parent. But I would just enter a lot of wisdom about what is your role. And again, that's the ultimate counselor cop out. It depends, is what I'm gonna say. What would you add?
You know, I've seen a situation where the adult children have actually gone, in this case it was the mom who was being abused in the relationship, and they went to their mom and said, "Mom, we're really concerned about you. We're worried about you," and shared their heart with their mom, and there was some pushback. And she chose, you know, to not really respond or to listen to their concerns, and they invited the conversation, they asked for the conversation, they let their mom know that they loved her, they cared for her, they cared about her safety, and she is an adult and could make the decision, and now they have been vigilantly praying for her, for both of their parents, obviously, but their mother in particular, because of her safety issues. So I think there are ways that we can actually move toward, especially either parent in that situation, and say, "Hey, I am concerned, and this is what I see," and you may or may not get sort of the response back that would be helpful or that you would like, but I think it's helpful. Again, we bring our concerns, we risk bringing it into the light and keeping those secrets from being hidden, to bring them in the light, even if it's just a conversation in the family.
The second part to that question was, so how do, if I have kind of grown up in this environment and watched my parents' abusive marriage unfold, how do I think wisely about possibly entering into marriage or even just being a faithful friend? I think the fact that you're asking that question bodes really well for the season of stepping into marriage, if that's where you're headed. But in the third session, we're going to talk about who is a potential perpetrator. And the answer to that isn't men, it isn't big, strong people, it isn't like sketchy people online. The answer is all of us are potential perpetrators. We all have the capacity to abuse someone. And so if we really confront that and sit with how humbling that is, we enter into a relationship seeking to be a faithful friend, a faithful spouse that blesses instead of curses, that speaks truth and love. And so I think surrounding yourself with people that demonstrate that and that point you to that and that hold you accountable.
That's great.
Would you speak to abusive neglect via broken family dynamics, quality socialization, lack of discipline, et cetera?
Yeah, that was one of the categories that I left off of the five or six that we identified earlier. That is a category of abuse identified in Illinois as a protected kind of abuse. So if you're working with a child who is a victim of neglect, that would be a where you would bring in the authorities. So I just want to acknowledge in that question that neglect is absolutely a very serious, very impactful way for someone to be abused. And I honestly think it can be the most powerful, because if we bear the image of God, if we're meant to be with relationship with the other people, that is starving somebody of being in relationship. Often like the physical, emotional needs are being neglected, but the relational needs of somebody is so profound to who we are. And so I just talked about neglect. What's the actual question? How do we help that person? If it's a child, you're a mandated reporter, and you do report cases of neglect. Praise God that you've picked up on it, because those issues of neglect are very hard to find. But you're thinking of the needs of the child being met, or whoever it is, and that's being fed, being taken to school, being clothed, being safe, all of those things.
You know, one of the ways that we hide too when we think about abuse is that we're so afraid of offending, of We have this desire to protect reputation. So what if this friend, what this family is your neighbor or actually a friend of yours, you know, that you care about? Well, so we think, okay, well, I can't really say anything because I don't want to offend them and push them away, or I don't want to like their reputation to be tarnished if this comes out. Well, this child's safety, this child's heart, this child's well-being, this child's whole self is at risk if we're not willing to take that risk. So even though it's really, really hard, I encourage us to take a risk in loving another person well. And we do have to have God's wisdom as we step toward that. And it's risky business, and it's an important risky business.
Justice. Yeah. So the question, I'm supposed to repeat it because we're being recorded, is how do I kind of handle the Christian call to forgiveness? How do I steward that? And how do I counsel somebody who might be wondering, do I forgive? When do I forgive? What kind of role does that fit in when I'm walking with somebody? That's you. You good on that?
Well, forgiveness doesn't necessarily mean that the relationship is reinstated, right? God does call us to forgiveness, and we are only able to forgive as we have been forgiven. And Jesus took our punishment on the cross, took our sin on the cross, and has forgiven our sins. So he says that we can move toward forgiveness as we begin to take those steps in healing. That doesn't mean that forgiveness happens overnight. Forgiveness does not mean that that person gets a free pass. That forgiveness does not mean that justice is not also a part of what needs to happen in the situation. That person is not held accountable for their actions. There are consequences. And if that means that there is no further relationship, yeah, that's part of it. If that means that that person has to go to prison, yeah, that's part of it too. And as a victim, I can move toward that person in forgiveness even as they experience the consequences of their actions that they have actually given to me, right? But that doesn't mean that I have to be reinstated in relationship with them or reconciled to them. I'm reconciled to God, not necessarily to them in that particular situation.
I would add, I've never in a counseling relationship when someone is disclosing abuse to me said, well, what do you think about forgiving them? That is such a far order down the road of priorities that sure, we will get there. But if we get there, it's because that person has brought it kind of themselves as a goal. Like, hey, Rebecca, I'm walking kind of towards Christ in the midst of this, and I'm just kind of conflicted over this call to forgiveness and the horrors of what I've been through. What do I do with that? So that would be that person bringing that as a goal to me, rather than me introducing it as like, okay, TikTok, if you want to heal, you got to get this person forgived. Healing doesn't work like that, especially around this kind of abuse, especially when that power dynamic is so serious. So I'm very patient with that and open-handed and hopeful. Forgiveness does not mean that you call that person up and say, hey, I forgave you. A lot of the work that we're doing around forgiveness is vertical, where you're talking to God about the depth of hurt that you experienced, that the person who hurt you was an image bearer, and the fact that God calls you to forgive, and there's a mysteriousness and a freedom for the person granting forgiveness, that's what motivates us to forgive. And so we're spending a lot of time just going slow and hopeful, and I would say very victim-led in that goal, in that area. It's a humbling part, but I would say that's like very far down the line of where we are.
There's one other thing that I would add, and if we can imagine a picture, we like, especially in our North American society, we like to, you know, from A to B to C, we want to get there. And we want this it to be very straightforward and always an upward trajectory, right? We want to get there fast. But imagine instead of this straight line moving in an upward trajectory, we imagine a lot of loops. Some are really big loops, some are smaller loops. You know, some have some upward like space between them, and some are really close together. And imagine that's what moving toward forgiveness looks like. That maybe today I'm stepping toward forgiveness, and I'm living in that, and I'm hopeful, and I see what God has done in my life, and I'm willing to extend that forgiveness to the other person. And then a memory strikes me, or an experience. I see the offender, or I have a dream, or whatever that might be, and the loop circles back around, and I have to kind of start not all the way over, because it doesn't take me all the way back to the beginning of the abuse, but it takes me back, and I have to go through that process again. And maybe this time I make it a little further along, and the loop becomes a little further apart, a little bigger, and I'm reminded again, I'm triggered again, I experience another sort of memory or another layer that I didn't even remember from before, but something else comes to mind. I have to go through that process of reminding myself that I am forgiven, that I can extend that forgiveness. So it's, can you imagine this loopy process of what forgiveness looks like? I think that's very much a picture of reality. We are human, and God knows that. He knows that we're made out of dust, and so that we can move toward forgiveness even with Him knowing who we are.
We'll do one more question, and then we'll have a break. Or Josh?
Take a break. I think most of the questions, and there are a lot of good questions, a lot of them push into the next
great
content, and so we'll push some of them out. Could you very briefly, though, a few people, I think two people have already asked, what is a mandated reporter?
What is a mandated reporter? Yeah, so a mandated reporter is someone who, over the course of their work or volunteer, works with protected classes, and those would be children, people with disabilities, or seniors over the age of 65. And as a mandated reporter, you are responsible if you come across abuse, any of the things that we identified earlier and beyond that. I said we didn't cover every facet of abuse. You're required to call an organization called DCFS, Department of Child and Family Services, in Illinois, and to report the abuse. My hope would be that you are trained in that. If you are ministering or a volunteer minister with the children at Redeemer or whatever church you're serving, if you're not, you can get yourself trained and equipped to make that call. But as a counselor, as a pastoral staff, my hope is that there's a posture of making that call with you. So if you are a mandated reporter, the way it works at my school is teachers come and collaborate with me as we take that next step. So I'm not saying you need to figure that out all on your own, but you do need to realize that that is part of your call. And that's a really short thing. People spend hours doing trainings around those things.
So even that practically, as think about as a Sunday school teacher, as
you're
a small group leader, as a ministry leader, and somebody shares their story with you, you might need to, you know, like bring it to your pastor and say, this is a confidential matter, but what I heard, and I'm concerned that someone is at risk, a child, a senior, someone with disabilities, would you help me think through it? And that would be the step that you would take.